Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome to Fitz Dog Radio. It's another, I record these on Monday. They come out on Wednesday. I don't know what's going on in your life right now, but I've been on Twitter a little bit today, which I'm not, I don't go on it a lot, to be honest. I feel like I've outgrown it. But there was a discussion today about whether or not 100 men could take on a gorilla, which captivated my attention way more than it should have. It should have been a glancing thought exercise for just a few seconds, and it turned into maybe an hour of debating it online. And I don't know. In the end, I think what it comes down to is, all right, a gorilla. Take a silverback gorilla, those big, fast motherfuckers that you see in the zoo, and you're so glad that there's a giant plexiglass wall between you, or whatever, and 100 guys, and you think, all right, well, maybe if it was the right 100 guys, like, okay, if you got Navy SEALs that are, first of all, going to work in unison and are going to have a strategy and are going to be willing to get injured, if not killed. I mean, there's a very good chance that the first two guys in are cannon fodder. They're gorilla fodder. You will get ripped apart. Can you, as a soldier, absorb? Now, normally, they would because they're fighting for liberty. They're fighting for democracy, but in this case, you're fighting over an internet dare. So I guess you're not going to get Navy SEAL. So you're going to have to ratchet down to the next level down, and the next level down, and many, many levels down. I think it would really just be 100 internet trolls, shitty people that don't care that the silverback gorilla is an endangered species and are willing to kill one to settle a bet. Is it a bet or is it just a question? So I don't know. So here's some of the research that I did. Silverback gorillas are about 400 pounds. They're about 10 times stronger than a human. They can bend iron bars. They have longer arms. They can run like 25 miles an hour. They can fucking climb, which we can't. They've got super thick skin. They got really hard muscles. So you're not going to hurt them. The only thing you're going to try to do is wear them down by getting as many guys or women. Maybe women want to do this. I don't want to gender shame. Get as many on each limb as you can, I would guess. But, you know, we scatter. I think humans might run in together, but when they see the first guy's head get literally ripped off, it would become very unorganized. It would be easy pickings, because then the gorilla can take people on two or three at a time, which is no problem at all. Is it a wide open plain that might favor the humans, because then they can surround, they can do what the Cro-Magnon man used to do with elk. But if you're in a wooded area where the gorilla can jump up into a tree, etc., that's to his advantage. What else? So I think it'd just be about weighing the gorilla down and hopefully not killing him. Let's just make him tap out. You would need to grab and hold. And I just don't know. Like, I was thinking about, what about other things? I would think that a bear might be even more ferocious than a gorilla, because a gorilla can grab you and definitely hit you, but a bear can fucking destroy you with his claws and his mouth. And if you get a big one, I don't know, what are the biggest ones? Grizzlies? If you get a grizzly, I mean, you can't even go eye to eye with that guy. The gorilla, you're going eye to eye with. The bear has, oh my God, he's got layers of fat. Or what about a hippo? Hippos kill more humans than, I shouldn't say any animal, because people always go like, what about a mosquito? Well, I don't know. Is a mosquito an animal? But I think as far as actual animals, I think hippos kill more people. They are crazy. So a hippo might be a better one. Or what if you flip it? What if you flip it and you make it one human versus a hundred? Maybe 100 hungry rats, like starved rats in like a squared off ring. Who would win that? I think the rats would, to be perfectly honest. I think they would. They know what to go. They go for your asshole and your eyes. And once you don't have an asshole or eyes, you can't fight. What about one human baby versus 1,000 baby chicks? Because the baby, not a newborn, but like, say, a six-month-old, they have very strong hands. I've seen videos where they can hang off of bars, like they can hold their body weight. And I think they might crush maybe 100 chicks. Or what about one Israeli soldier versus 50 pro-Palestinian sorority girls? But they've each drank like 6 White Claws, which I don't know if that helps them or hurts them. I think for some of them it's spinach, Popeye spinach, and for some of them they get groggy and maybe not so tough. So let's say that. Or what about one pope, one human pope versus 1,000 cancer cells? Who wins that? Oh, I guess we just saw who wins that. And the pope had God behind him. Here's the thing. The Pope fought cancer. I don't even know how the Pope died. I'm assuming it was cancer. He was old. Probably had cancer, right? Which means that God had cancer kill his Pope. Because God made cancer, right? Anyway. Enough. Got a great guest today who's going to be on in a minute. I was jamming out to Courtney Barnett all day. Do you know her music? Oh, she's fantastic. That's why I like having kids. They turn me on to some music I wouldn't have heard before. Courtney Barnett, very talented. And then I want to talk about, I had a good time with my kids this weekend. I hung out. We had brunch. We've had brunch at our house a couple times in the last few weeks. We do a Sunday brunch. It's something that when we first moved to LA 25 years ago, we used to have brunch every Sunday. And all my friends would come over. It was like all my New York, everybody I knew from New York moved to LA at the same time. So it was Mike Gibbons and Mary Fitzgerald and Tom O'Neill, and then Zach Galifianakis and Nick Swartzen and Zoe Friedman. And it was comedians and other people. And we used to hang out all day at my house. And for some reason, we had kids and we just stopped doing it. So I kind of started it again. And I realized, like, my neighbors, it's just my neighbors come over. And I've got a very close group of friends in the neighborhood. And we've grown. We've grown old? We kind of have. I'm 59. I've grown old. Do you grow old or do you fade old? Do you degenerate old? Growing sounds like it's going in a positive direction. So we've gotten old together and we've raised kids together and they all come over and they're all different kinds of people. A lot of them are writers. Many of my friends are writers. They write for the LA Times. They write screenplays. They write books. They write on sitcoms. A lot of writers. An architect was here. An actor. Couple actors, a musician. And what's crazy is we've all lived in this same little, like, 3-block radius. It's like, it's probably about 10 couples that we're very close to. You know, we play poker a lot. We just went to somebody else's house for dinner this past week, and then we just do stuff. And I think it's really good for you. You know, like, I was thinking about it. Of the 10 couples, nobody's gotten divorced. And everybody raised kids. Everybody's kids, look, I'm not saying they're all rocket scientists, but none of them are like fucked up on drugs. And they've pretty much all moved out at this point. You know, once they've gotten to a certain age, at a reasonable age, they've moved out. I think community is so important. People talk about marriage or, you know, but like a community of friends it's not everything, but it's a big part of what makes life complete for me anyway. I don't know. But whatever. All right, so I have more funny stuff to say, but I feel like I just want to get to the guest today. We have my friend Frank Jackson, who's a buddy of mine. I've known this kid since I was probably 12 years old. 11, and we grew up together. We're still good friends. He lives in Atlanta now. He has launched a line of coffee. I guess a line of coffee. It's called Sleepy Hollow Coffee Roasters because that's what North Tarrytown is now called, Sleepy Hollow, and that's the name of the high school in town. So he's got these amazing coffee. He sent me home with a whole bunch of them. And they're all different. They're all really rich. And I mean, he walked me through all the steps of roasting and what he does. It's incredible coffee. There's one called Ichabod because Ichabod Crane, who's the legend of Sleepy Hollow, Washington Irving. Anyway, the Ichabod one, I think, is my favorite. It's got like it's like an espresso. It's like sweet and get like dark chocolatey tasting, and I like my coffee to have a little chocolate to it. That's a guilty pleasure, but this is it's just really good quality stuff. I really want you guys to check it out. He's just launching this. He just launched the website. It's called SleepyHollowCoffeeRoasters.com, and he's putting out a special promotion for my listeners. Get 15% off your first entire order. And if it's over $50, it ships for free. Use promo code FITZDOG, FITZDOG. I don't profit from this, but this guy is a quality dude who has made a great product that I think you'll really enjoy. And I hope you'll check it out and see what you think. You can, if you do like it, you can sign up for a membership. And again, it's SleepyHollowCoffeeRoasters.com. Write to me at FitzDogRadio@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of it. We can read the reviews online, good and bad. Sorry, Frank, I'll read the bad ones too. I don't think there will be any, but I'm going to be straightforward on this. It's, there's a Mocha Java one that I really liked. It's got kind of a little nutty thing to it. I think it's called Old Dutch. Old Dutch, yeah. Here's the two I'd recommend. Old Dutch and Ichabod. Those are the two I really like. He's going to send me some more so I can review the others. Anyway, also, what else? I want to give a shout out. I'll do that later. My tour dates, I'm going to be in Huntington, California this Sunday night, May 4th at the Mamba. Escondido Grand Comedy Club, May 9th and 10th. I'll be in Cincinnati at the Commonwealth something, May 16th and 17th. It's actually in Dayton, Kentucky. Tampa Side Splitters, June 5th through the 7th. Naples, Florida, Off the Hook, June 8th. Then I'll be in Torrance, Austin, Point Pleasant, New Jersey, La Jolla, Vegas, Chicago, New Orleans. Go to FitzDog.com, get some tickets, come out and support some live comedy. Don't forget also the merchandise. If you go to FitzDog.com, the Sunday Papers hats and mugs, tote bags, all kinds of stuff. For the 5th anniversary, pick one up. Show it off to your friends. All right, so let's get to it. My guest. Okay, what do we got for my guest? Let's pull up his credits. I want to make sure I get them all right. Jeremiah Watkins. Jeremiah is a guy that I've known. He kind of started out doing the Kill Tony. Well, no, I think first it was the roast battle, and he was... There was like this the wave and the roast battle that he did this physical crazy comedy. He comes out of Chicago, I think Second City. I know he did professional improv, and you see it in his stand-up. He's very loose and back and forth with the crowd in a really good way. And then he was in the band on Kill Tony for a long time, and he's since split off and started his own thing. And I just did his podcast. I think it's called Comedy on the Spot. That's out this week that I just did with Jeff Ross and a couple other funny people. So check that out. But here is my conversation I had with him just a couple weeks ago. Here is the great Jeremiah Watkins. I'm here with Jeremiah Watkins. Jeremiah, I got to tell you right out of the gate. I mean, I always thought he was a stylish guy. You're tall, you're lean, you can wear almost anything. And you came in here today with this fedora.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you even buy something like that?
There's a pawn shop down on Melrose that not many people know about.
What did you pawn to get it?
My car.
No.
Yeah. This is a really expensive hat. Yeah. I asked for if I could get the guy's hat from Jurassic Park, the old guy.
Right, right.
And they said that they couldn't include the amber cane.
Yeah.
But just to exchange just for the car straight up. And I was like, you know, this is a fair trade.
Yeah. But then you're in a position where you've got the hat. It's worth tens of thousands of dollars. Now, how do you get home? Because, I mean... You can't take the bus.
I'm Ubering in style.
Yeah.
Uber blacks only with this hat.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
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 And do you talk about the hat with the driver? You don't want to draw any attention to it.
Don't want
to
draw any attention. No.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's an honor to have you and the hat on
Thank
the show.
Thank you. This is my plus one that I was asking about.
Oh, that's what you meant.
It's the hat.
Oh, I see.
Because it takes up some real estate on screen.
Right, right, right.
Next to me. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Actually, Jeremiah got here with a green hat on. And you can't tell. I don't know if people can tell when they look at this beautiful set that Paul Roman has designed and Amber has helped put together. This is green screen.
It fooled me, obviously. I didn't think to not wear a green hat.
Well, I should have told you not to wear a green hat. I mean,
but how many people wear green hats?
Very rarely.
Right? It's a rare thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I guess, you know, some of the Oakland A's. Is that a green team?
Who's green and yellow.
Yeah, green and yellow. The Jets.
Uh-huh. The Eagles sometimes.
I don't know. I like to wear green because I'm Irish and my eyes, you can't tell that my eyes are green because I have recessed kind of a Cro-Magnon brow, which, so you can't, you don't, look at my eyes up close. Wow. They're kind of beautiful.
Wow, they're very nice.
But nobody knows.
They're like shamrock shake green.
They're shamrock shake green and you can only get them for like 3 months of the year. But I call them the closers because if I meet a girl, it's going to be, and you know, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's
maybe you like my wrap, maybe you like my shirt, but you're not sure. And then I bring in the closers when I get in close.
I'm moist.
Yeah.
I just went moist.
Yeah. The thing is with a guy, if he goes moist, he's done. Like, if you're flirting and you go, I'm moist, well,
it already happened.
Yeah. With a woman, I mean, she's getting ready.
Right, right. Yeah. We're done. Finito.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so don't pull those around me whenever we're shaking hands at the store. When you're bringing me up or I'm bringing you up. Don't give me one of these. I don't want to start myself.
Oh, right.
That's embarrassing.
I should do that to the other comics.
Do it. That's a power move.
That is a power move.
They can't even do anything about it. They can't resist those eyes.
And then everybody's like, wow, nobody can follow Greg Fitzsimmons.
Yeah, they get not funny and there's cum in their pants at the beginning of their set.
Yeah, and they get lethargic.
Yeah, they just want to take a nap.
I'm useless after an orgasm. I plan them judiciously. I have a rule, and I say it out loud, never jerk off on Monday.
Because
Monday is the day you got to get shit going. You got to get your list out.
I think I own a Muhammad Ali poster with that saying on it.
Really?
Yeah.
Cassius Clay.
Yeah, he said that, I think.
Damn.
Yeah. It has like, I have another version where there's like a jet airplane with it on it. And stuff.
Or never jerk off on Monday.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You ever jerked off on a plane?
Ooh, like no.
No?
No.
But you're a little tall for that.
Oh, I mean, I'm lucky just to make it to the bathroom. Yeah. Like, I'm all hunched and, you know. Yeah.
You ever dropped a deuce on a plane?
Yeah, of course. You have to sometimes. Emergency.
I can't imagine you. What are you, 6'3"?
Mm-hmm.
6'3", trying
I'm
to get...
I'm a praying mantis in there. Just legs up on my freaking... Just trying to... My own homemade squatty potty in there.
And you can't wipe because you get the little praying mantis
hands.
Yeah,
just the little T-Rex hands. Yeah. I don't know how to get down there. I just try to... It's a mess. So then, once again, I'm moist on a flight.
Oh, you're always
the
moist.
Wrong kind.
That's your new
that's
album.
That's what they tell me. Always moist.
Always moist.
And looking with this hat, it makes sense.
Oh, my God.
Oof.
I can't. If I wore that hat with my eyes, I think the whole audience would get moist.
I think it would. They'd have to shut the club down.
Yep. Shut it down.
Shut it down.
Bring on Don Barris.
Yeah. The show's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's when you know the show's over. People don't realize Don Barris comes on stage. It's every night, right?
Every night still. Yeah, yeah. And you are, yeah, yeah.
If you ever come out to Los Angeles, because there's like comedy tour. Sex tourists go to Thailand. Comedy tourists come to L.A. and they go to the store.
Yeah, they really do.
Because you got three stages, and sometimes you'll see shows in two rooms that night. And obviously, the lineups are crazy. You're there at least three nights a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, Don Barris is this guy who, he does audience warm-up for the Jimmy Kimmel Show for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
He sleeps all day. He emerges from, you know, the earth, the crust of the earth at like 4 p.m. And he gets riled up and he comes in and he goes on last.
Yeah.
But he gets there 9 o'clock
sure.
and just kind of watches,
yeah.
and hangs out.
Goes through the halls, does Instagram lives.
Yep.
Yeah, he's always like streaming.
Yeah.
He's got sometimes, if it's Monday, he has his Ding Dong Show, which is, if you haven't seen that, if you're a comedy fan, you got to check it out. It's late on Monday nights. He has, the only way to describe it, it's a cast of misfit toys that he's found all over LA, and he just does this bizarre show with them.
Are they homeless, some of them?
I think some of them have been at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe.
They're the kind of people that they're not homeless. They're just, they're home sporadic.
They're in between homes at
yeah.
the moment.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not homeless, but it's not their home when they're sleeping somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a favor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A favor that's got about it's a 4-day shelf
yeah.
life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know a couple guys like that.
But yeah, it's a chaotic show that you gotta see.
And then and it's funny because he does warm up, you know, I don't know what you make to do warm up, but I think it's actually pretty lucrative. I bet you he makes $4,000 or $5,000 a week.
Hey, that's good for warm up. That's great.
It's great. And then he does his spots every night. So I don't know what you make, you know, if he's in the I don't know what they pay him. They probably give him $100 a night. That's another $500
than the other comics?
Just I would imagine. Closing? I would imagine.
More like a hosting kind of a fee kind of a thing?
I'm going to call Emily right now and find out. Yeah. I bet you he's got to get a little bit extra for that. If he's not, I think we can plead our case.
For Don to get more money if he's making the same. I mean, he should make a little bit. He's on stage longer than everybody else.
Yes, and it's also the pressure of closing it out.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Are you really calling her?
I'm trying. It's so funny, like somebody young like you, if you were to try to call somebody on the phone, it would take you 3 seconds to pull it up. And I don't have her number in my phone. She books me every week at the club. Yeah. I have it, but I can't find it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus. Do you think of me as an old guy?
No.
No. Good.
No, I think of you as seasoned.
Nice. I like that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've been around.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't, because the guys who I think of as old guys are guys who, and this may sound weird, is like guys who I don't like riff with.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right, right.
Like if you're not like in passing and like kind of like in the mix, then like they're kind of just doing their own thing. And like, I respect that, but like they're not like in the cut, like they're not down to hang in the hall or the back seats or whatever and like cut it up.
Yeah,
that's why I consider like old comics where they're like, no, I'm done with that.
Yeah, I'm locked in.
Yeah, they're just doing their set. They're kind of like, they talk to their people, but they're kind of closed off.
Sometimes they come in with a friend who's non-comic,
and they're old too.
Which is cancer.
Yeah,
never bring a non-comic. Don't even bring a comic. Come alone to the fucking club.
I know. Because unless it's just a special occasion. That's got to be.
It's my cousin from New Jersey, and he just, and he, big smile, but inside you're going like, oh, God, this guy's going to be, he's going to be the riff killer. You know, you're going to all be riffing, and he's going to interject something that's.
Ever been left with the cousin from New Jersey?
Oh.
And you're just standing there, and you're like, I don't even know what to do with this. Why am I babysitting your cousin from New Jersey now?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff Ross comes swinging in here with his cousin, and then he goes off to do a spot. And now I'm trying to talk about financial planning. I don't have any finances to plan.
That's what I forget sometimes when I go back to Kansas City to visit family. I'll talk with family members, friends who I like, it's after a show or I'm just home visiting.
Yeah.
And then like after a couple minutes, I'm like, What do you want to talk about? Because I, you know, like I don't know where to take this.
It's also tough when they know what you do. Maybe they've listened to your podcast. They have like a lot more information on you than you do on them.
And
then they sort of ask you questions, especially if it's somebody brand new. Like, hey, when did you know you want to be a comedian?
Those questions. I've started to on podcasts. When somebody asks me that, I go, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
And they go, what?
Yeah, yeah.
They go, you can literally ask me anything. I literally, like, I'm a comic. I'm an improviser. You can do whatever you want with me. But let's not do this. How did, and when did you know? And like, and how did you get your start? I'm like, there's just enough online where you can just find that.
Yeah. Are you on the circuit?
And also, like, if we're buddies, like, figure it out.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Right.
Yeah.
Are you on the circuit? That's what I always love. The circuit, like like we're black guys in the 1930s.
Yeah.
And you just do the Chitlin' circuit.
Right,
you
go, right. Hop from London.
You just take it. You're hitchhiking from Memphis to, you know, Louisville.
I heard they cover your bus ticket if you do that gig. Ooh, all right, cool.
You know what I found out is like those old guys, when the rooms were all run by the mafia. They were like mm-hmm. Playboy clubs and like little, you know, jazz clubs, and yeah. they bring in comedians. And, you know, they all wore those diamond pinky rings.
Why?
Because back then, there was no credit cards. And so if they got stiffed on a gig from a mob guy, they used the ring to buy, they'd hawk it like you do with your hat.
Yeah.
And then they would have enough money to take the train back home again.
So the hat is my diamond ring.
That's it.
That's pretty cool.
We should get diamond rings, me and you.
Matching pinky yeah. diamond rings?
Yeah.
Oh, and then when we pass off the mic to each other, we do one of these.
We clink them.
We clink them.
Yeah.
Clink.
Yeah, right.
And then people would be like, what does that mean? We're like, don't worry about it.
Hey, you don't ask questions. We're not going to do that.
Don't ask questions you want to hear the answers to.
We should get every comic to wear pinky rings.
And then people would be like, is this a weird cult? Like, what is this? Everybody has a diamond pinky yeah, ring?
Right. It's got cyanide in it for the Friday Night Late Show that doesn't go right. You just pop it open. Yeah, those old Borscht Belt comics, I got to know them because I was a member of the Friars Club in New York.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which was really cool. Jeff Ross was there a lot.
Yeah.
And Susie Essman from Curb, Judy Gold, Elon Gold, you know, Elon yeah. Gold. And it was just a good hang. Like, you know, we were all comics banging around the city at night. We had our days free, and we would go
there.
That's
a cool club to be a part of.
It was great. They had a pool table, the two pool tables. You'd shoot pool. They had a card room upstairs.
I want to play pool with you sometime.
Oh, are you a player?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd love that.
I'd love it.
You know, the West Side doesn't have any pool, other than bar tables. There's no pool hall anymore.
There's one. There's one. The Brickyard Tavern in Hollywood has a couple tables that are pretty good.
They're decent tables?
Yeah. Full size and, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than you go into a bar and people have their beers on the table and some chick is sitting on the table.
I hate that. Yeah. Just seeing that, like, you know, just out of respect for the equipment and stuff. I'm just like, when somebody sets a beer on the felt, it drives me insane.
Yeah, because you're from Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, respect the table.
Kansas City is a pool town. That's like everyone's got a pinky ring.
Yeah,
right.
Everyone's at least got a lot of people have tables in their basements or
do they?
Yeah,
I grew up with a table in my basement. Just full disclosure, just so you know what you're getting into.
Okay.
Did you have a table in your basement?
Yeah, I did.
Oh shit! Uh-oh.
It's going.
Oh, what's your game? 8 ball, 9 ball, straight pool?
I never got into 9 ball too much.
9 ball's fun.
But yeah.
9 ball's fun because it's like life. There's a time to be on offense and there's a time to be on defense.
Yeah, I think I would like it if I tried playing consistently, but it's, you know, there's you have to be very strategic with 9 ball, where I've ran most of them, and then I get down to, you know, last ball or two, and then whoosh, game's over.
Other guy grabs it on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really about having a vision for the table and being able to set up your shots. But I won a 9 ball tournament at the Friars Club.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I was brand new. I was like maybe 25 years old. And the guy I played in the finals was Paul Sorvino from Goodfellas.
Okay.
Remember Paul Sorvino?
Yeah.
Paulie. And he definitely had a pinky ring.
I'm sure he did.
He was...
Did he put it on the table at any point?
He said, Fitzdog. He used to call me Fitzdog. And he said, he was very sweet. Like, we won, and then they started a team. There was a league in New York, and it was like the different clubs would play each other. Mm-hmm. The Harvard Club, the Players Club, which was like, it's just like an old Broadway Equity club, but, you know, fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the there was one that was all union officers, the union club.
Okay.
And the union club was like old Mayflower white people, and the servants, this was so fucking weird, were not only all black, they were dark black, and they wore white gloves.
Weird.
Yeah.
So actually, I don't know that they were black even because they had the gloves on. It could have been white guys in blackface.
Sounds like a pretty cool club to be a part of. Are they accepting members, Greg? Because I'm looking for a new home.
I mean, it's funny because you see that and you go, this is wrong. And then you think, all right, we need less diversity.
Right, right. Or diversity in the right places. Right. I got to be selective with my diversity. Right, now. Right, right. Yeah.
We got to reverse diverse this one.
Yeah. White guys with black gloves.
Have you ever worked a job where you were mostly with black people or Latino people or other than yourself?
I've worked the car wash that I worked at a car wash in Kansas City for a while, and it was a pretty good mix of everybody there. And then some of the restaurant jobs that I worked, it was a mixture of it's mostly Mexicans in the kitchen, like at this Italian restaurant that I worked at.
Right.
And there was one guy named Arturo that we called Arturini, the dishwashing machine. Spoke no English. Yeah. Happiest guy you've ever met in your entire life.
Right.
He was the fastest freaking
dude. Those guys are amazing. They always make you feel like, holy shit, if this guy can be happy, how is it I'm working an hour a night? And you know, you're at the St. Louis Improv and it's fucking numbers are low on the Thursday night show, whatever. And then you see this dude whipping out glasses and smiling and laughing. Yep. You know, it's amazing.
It's a good reminder when you do gigs like that. And then you go to somewhere Starbucks or something where somebody is clearly hating their life.
Yeah.
That's a good reminder. You're like, we have it pretty good.
Right.
We're chasing the dream. Hey, sometimes the dream, there's bumps along the way.
Sure.
But I mean, dude, yeah. Come on.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I go back and forth. I think social media is the place where I get the least happy because on one hand, there's the joy of seeing somebody doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Like Tony Hinchcliffe just put out a video about, did you see that video he just put out? He just posted.
Yeah.
And I was like, good for him. Here's this guy celebrating something that's helping other comics and I'm happy for his success. And then sometimes I see somebody who's playing a big theater and they're kind of being douchey about walking out with the fucking arms up and the crass standing O and you go like, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I want to be that guy. Sure. I just don't want you to be that guy sometimes.
I mean, my buddy Stevie Weeby, have you ever met Bobby Lee's brother, Steve Lee?
Oh, yeah, I did.
So I did a podcast with him for a while, and he always said, don't compare in despair. Don't compare. that classic
comparison. And I really don't.
Comparison is the joy of thief, that quote that we've all heard many times. But yeah, it's that dude. Social media, that's the easiest place to do it.
It's the only place I feel it. I never feel it in when I'm at the store. It's like, this is, I don't resent anybody, and I'm happy for everybody.
Yeah.
In general, I'm happy for everybody.
Yeah.
And then, but then I get on social media, and it's just one, especially when I just had a bad weekend, and you're just watching one after the other. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Shout out to Tony Hinchcliffe and the guys.
Yeah.
Streaming on Netflix now. Kill Tony.
What do you mean, Netflix streaming? Now.
You didn't hear about that?
No.
His Kill Tony's on Netflix.
How often?
It just releases a special. And they have a couple more that are in the works that are going to be put out in the next few months.
Oh, so they'll put one out every few months?
I think that's how it goes.
Really?
But I'm just a guy in this hat, so you can't trust me 100%.
Have you been on any of them that are going on Netflix?
Not on the Netflix ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you've done a ton of Kill Tonys.
Oh, I mean, I was one of the original band leaders of the show. Yeah. Right. Did a couple hundred episodes, 5 years of the show.
No shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenon.
It truly is. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's kind of like how The Gong Show was so big, and that was before your time, but The Gong Show was probably in the 70s, and it did create a lot of stars,
mm-hmm.
That came off the show that were goofballs, but there wasn't the outlets
for those people. Like now, you just got comedy clubs. You know, if you get big on that show, they just plug you into.
You can tour.
Yep.
Do clubs and then theaters. And,
social media.
Yeah.
Back then, it was just more like everybody knew the unknown comic or, you know.
Is that where he originally came from?
Yeah.
Was it Gong Show?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I was curious. I need to do some research on that guy because I literally see his headshot at every comedy club I go to.
Oh, really?
Like in just the random clubs. Like
yeah, it'll be yeah,
like
yeah.
You'll find the unknown comic
yeah.
like at Zany's, at the store, like
yeah.
just random spots like all over the country. Like I've seen the unknown comic, but I just didn't know like what his
backstory
is. If
people don't know who the unknown comic is, because maybe this is inside baseball, mm-hmm. but there's a comic. He's out on stage in a tacky suit and he had a brown bag over his head. And he did very kind of corny, goofy, animated comedy. And it was hilarious. It was just such a funny idea because, you know, comedy was just kind of starting at that point. Like that style of comedy.
Sure.
He was kind of making fun of that guy.
Yeah.
You know? It was very meta.
I mean, it's early alt comedy, it sounds like.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Andy Kaufman was probably doing it around then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of the comics in the 80s also, you don't see people doing characters. Like in the 80s, you had, you know, Bobcat Goldthwait and Judy Tenuta and Emo Phillips. And even Kinison was obviously playing a character, you know. And now it's like, yeah, you got Joey Diaz, but then you meet Joey and you go, oh, that's not a character, you know. Like...
I mean, I think that's part of the attraction to Adam Ray's Dr. Phil.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Is like there's not a lot of people doing that thing out there where they're playing a character. I mean, my friend Chelsea Lynn has a great character, Trailer Trash Tammy. She tours with that, like in character. She
oh, yeah, of
stand
course.
Up as
right,
Tammy.
Right.
But there's like a hand, Fahim does Lance Canstopoulos at the store.
But does he go out and
he
tour with
tour
that?
He doesn't tour with it, which
right.
I would love to see him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so, I mean, just.
You think he could maintain that for an hour?
I don't know. It might have to be part of a variety show.
Yeah.
Or you have to build towards that because,
right.
you know, to headline as just ourselves is hard enough.
Yeah,
like
right.
to headline as a character. Whew.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
Because if they're not buying it, you're stuck in that character for an hour. And we all have nights where they're not buying it. And then you pivot, you know, you change
yeah.
your energy, you do a little more crowd work, you know, there's so many adjustments you can make, but
yeah.
when you're in a character, that's it.
I know nothing worse than jumping ship on a, like staying committed as a character.
Yeah.
Actually, guys, sorry, this isn't the real me.
right,
I apologize that you guys don't like that character.
Right.
Let me figure something else out. Like,
yeah.
you're like, oh,
yeah.
God. Yeah.
I mean, in some ways you can do like, my own persona can change depending on the crowd sometimes. Because,
oh, dude, absolutely.
You know?
Sometimes I'm way angrier than other
nights. Yeah, right.
Sometimes I'm coming in hot. Or just like, depending on the audience, like they set me off in a way where I'm like, okay, let me channel this into the jokes.
Right.
And that's, the tone is going to be a little bit more, oh, he's a little bit more
yeah.
ready to be.
Well, it's also where you're coming from. Like, I really think that to be a good comic, you have to walk on stage. Like I have depression and I've had nights, like I had a night this year at the San Francisco Punchline and I'm sitting in the hotel and it's like probably my favorite club in the country. But somehow I fly in on Thursday and I get in at 3:00 and I sat in my room in the dark for like 2 hours, like just looking straight ahead. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of just dragged myself over there. And normally I'm like, you know, I know the manager. There's a hug. Whoever's serving me in the green room, I get to know them.
Yeah.
Other comics, you know, you're busting their ball. I just came in flat. I didn't say hi to anybody. I just walked in the green room and I just sat in the corner. And then they brought me on stage and I said, I'm in a dark place right now and I really don't know how I'm going to do this. And then somebody yelled something out like, you know, you can do it, man, or something. And then I just shit on him. And then I just like spun into comedy mode.
Yeah.
Like it, not right away. It took me a few minutes, but after I got a couple laughs, it was like I had just been injected with, what's the drug that makes you happy?
Adrenaline.
Endorphins. It was like I got an endorphin flood.
Yeah.
And when I walked off stage, That mood was, I couldn't even remember that mood.
Yeah.
And I was in a good mood for the rest of the weekend. But if I had gone on stage and pretended I was in a good place,
then you might have bombed or felt bad. Not bombed, but you know what I mean.
I wouldn't have connected.
We know when we don't, like at this point, like we know when we don't like sets. The goal is even, the goal always is to hopefully not let the audience know, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think it's about connecting to them in an honest way.
Yeah.
You know, and which means I feel like if I can meet them where they are and where I am and we have a relationship, at the end of the show, even if there weren't a ton of laughs, people walk out and they go, hey, that was fucking great. Like they react to it. They feel it.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just giving them the same, like, I don't know, like Kevin Meaney is probably my favorite comedian of all time. And he would go on stage and he was, I mean, another character. Like he just was wacky and high energy and silly. And he wore a bow tie and a jacket and he used to sweat. He would bring an extra shirt between shows. You know, he gave the audience 1,000%. But if they weren't buying it, like he didn't change gears. He just kept on going.
Right.
Which made the comedians like, that's when he'd get in the back of the room and watch because then he'd sweat even more and he'd start like, he'd start saying just little things between jokes, and it was amazing. So
some of the biggest laughs I've ever gotten from comics is when I'm just deep in a act out that's not working.
Yeah,
just deep committing to a physical bit where the audience is not into it at all.
Right,
and there's just comics howling in the back because I'm like,
right.
And then not this. Okay, let me try this over here.
Yeah, and you hear that laugh, and you know whose it is.
Oh, it's a dark laugh.
Yeah, when you hear Eric Griffin dark laughing, that's like wow, and that can save you. That can, you know.
Yeah,
a bad set can be really nice sometimes. You know, it can be so grounding when you just go up there and it's not happening and you let it not happen. Not that you'd give up.
Right.
But you're still trying, but you're not freaking out anymore. And then the next set you have is always like one of the best sets you've ever had because you just like, you have to recover.
Yeah. When you, that reset factor when you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm owed a good one.
Right,
after
right,
what
right.
I just went through and what I put that crowd through.
Yeah. Tell me more about the car wash. Yeah, I meant to go back to that.
What was
it like working in a car wash?
I worked there for, this was like back in Kansas City, and it was an outdoor year-round car wash. So,
are there indoor car washes?
When you put it that way, not really many. More like covered, like kind of things, but most of them are
covered.
Well, like, so the outside, like, once it went through the automated part, we would wipe it down outside with all the elements.
There was year-round.
Like, year-round.
No shit.
Yeah. That's why I say outdoor, because it's like, you know, you're exposed to everything. So, like, you would look out, and there was a big bank clock across the street, and it would be over 100 degrees in the summer, and then it would be, I remember looking at it, down to 17 degrees in the winter.
Uh-huh.
And there's people who are members who, if they had a card, anytime they filled up with gas, they get a free wash.
Oh, it was part of a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Were you pumping gas as well, or just the?
There's basically like there'd be like a sales attendant who'd come out and they're like, "Hey, you want to wash your car today?" Like that kind of a thing. But they wouldn't like pump it for you.
So then you were out there with the rag, just buffing it down, getting inside the car with the spray.
Oh, dude, detailing the inside, like if they paid for that, and then like getting the wheels, dressing the tires, the whole thing.
Never like when they do the tires, because I feel like,
don't like the shine
I
on
feel
that?
Like they put that armor all on, and it looks too shiny, and then I feel like over time it actually dries out the rubber.
Oh, I don't know.
You never stuck around for that.
No,
I just did your little Almirall thing.
I did the Almirall and then I let it out. I think the idea is that, you know, you get your car washed so much that there's always that shine on it.
I do think that.
No, I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you get used to, oh, that looks pretty nice. Oh, yeah. It's kind of fading. Oh, maybe I should go get a car
wash.
It's
like a fade in your hair.
Right. Right.
You got to keep that fade tight.
Tight.
And did you ever find anything in a car that was unusual?
Oh, I mean, just some of the worst stuff.
Really?
Cars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Used, like very soiled panties.
Uh-huh.
Like,
I think there was an actual mouse in one car that was filled up with stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes like somebody tried to keep their cats in the car and we're like, you got to get your cats out before we like vacuum it and stuff. Like we can't have live animals in here. Well, they're like, yeah, it's okay. Just they're in the back. We're like, no. A lot of a lot of just gross stuff. One of the worst things that I ever cleaned up was somebody spilled a gallon of nacho cheese in the back of a van.
No.
And they came in to detail it. And I had to carpet shampoo it, so I had to suck it up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've just working outside and stuff in the elements, like if you work out like mowing lawns or stuff, when later in the day you are coughing up dirt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Later in that night, after I did the carpet shampooing of the cheese, I was coughing up and blowing cheese out of my nose.
No way.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I should have been wearing a mask, but I'd never done cheese before. I'm like, this is fine.
Yeah.
And it was, dude, it was so gross.
You live and learn. If you're going to do cheese, wear the mask. Yeah. Now you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just sucking up just tons of cheese. Yeah. And it's like wringing out the mats and like, God. It was so gross.
And all the time, and all the while you're thinking about the lifestyle of this person that has a van and eats cheese nachos.
I think
it
was a weird catering thing.
Oh.
You know, like one of those like they dispensaries like at like a gas station or something that has like the nozzle that you like put it under. I think it was one of those big boxes that had to have spilled because it was too much for like jars of, you know, that would have been like 10 jars of queso that somebody would have. You know.
When I think of the top 10 worst things for you that you could eat, nacho cheese, movie butter.
Oh, yeah.
Relish at like a convenience store for a hot dog. Like anything in that condiment section of
it's
the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I eat pretty bad on the road because that's
you have no choice.
Yeah. And I love it too. So when I get back home, I try to like kind of cleanse out my system before I go back out on the road.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think I had pizza, no joke, probably 6 times this last week on the road.
Where were you?
I was in Nashville.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you get any hot chicken?
I did. Hattie B's, baby.
Really? Is that the place?
Oh, that's one of the spots. I love it.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. Ralphie May told me forever ago. He's like, you got to try Hattie B's. Yeah. You got to get that. Whenever he's like, it's a staple here. You got to get it.
And there's different levels, right? That you can order of hotness?
Yeah, and I usually get hot.
You do?
Yeah, yeah. I usually get hot.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to try that. Were you at Zany's?
Yeah. Yeah, I directed Josh Wolf's special on Wednesday.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so we did a couple shows and
just two shows.
Two shows. Yeah. Yeah. And okay. Then hoping to get it out in these next few months, but he did like a comedy music special there and killed. It was awesome.
I don't know, he did music.
Yeah, he does I think he does it more like on the road with guitar and stuff like that, and then he's also been touring with his son Jacob.
Oh, that's right.
They have a fun, it's a really cool, unique dynamic to see father and son do like jokes together and stuff on stage. So it's cool.
Weren't they just in Australia?
Yeah, they just did a tour over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Wow, that's pretty cool. How many cameras did you have?
I think 7.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it was a big, busy.
Is that something you want to do? You want to direct?
Yeah, I have been. I have been directing, and it's something that I want to do and continue to do. I just launched a production company.
1,000%.
1,000%. Avery Pearson.
Yeah.
Me and my buddy, we did a we had a cool write-up in LA Times recently that...
I saw that. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they just kind of like laid out some of the stuff that we're doing. Yeah, we just did this... we got hired to do an Einstein Bros Bagels campaign that I directed.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So
Dude.
We shot a comedy music video for them and made an ad out of it. And then, yeah, they chopped it up for their socials. And there's a couple spots that are airing, like, I think on Netflix and, like, around the internet right now.
Nice.
So, yeah, we're hoping to do more of that. So, Josh Wolf special. And then we have a Jack Jr. special that we're shooting next month at the Alex Theater in Glendale.
Jack Jr., who's that?
Comedian. He's open like for Fluffies. Like he was on Arsenio's Netflix like introducing show. He's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
His parents own the HaHa in North Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you direct a special,
What are you like? What are you focused on in terms of taking the comedian and trying to capture them on the special?
So what we did with Josh Wolf was the concept was, it's his he's going to call it the campfire special. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we did with him was we brainstormed and we tried to think of what's the best way to capture a campfire vibe, like with the special and with the comedy and everything. And we thought of this idea for like the set design, just to make it a little bit different. We bought these curtains and we put these little lights through, like we poked holes through this curtain to make it look like a starry night behind him. So we've got these great like tracking shots where he's like on a stool with his guitar and the audience is in lawn chairs, like camping chairs. Like
the whole audience or just the front?
The front is like wrapped around him.
Oh, I love that. Chairs. Yeah.
So it's just something a little bit different, like where just to get him in space. And he had like some special guests that are on the show that I don't know if he wants me to say or not yet, but he's got some fun special guests on the
Jack
special.
Jack Jr.?
Josh Wolf. No.
You're just trying to shoehorn all
your just all of them like in one spot. Yeah. But yeah, so we're working on we're doing a walkthrough of the Alex Theater with Jack Jr. later this week, and we're trying to figure out like what's going to be kind of his, you know, kind of angle to bring that all together. And then as far as like directing, it's just like what makes the comic look good and just in a way where it's like in a not distracting way,
right, you know.
That's the thing, is I just watched Louis C.K. special, hilarious, and you know, and he's obviously directing it himself, he's a director, and he wanted this sort of like very cinema verite thing where he had a cameraman on stage that was getting within like 10 feet of him, you know, and getting these moving shots, and at one point Louis just stops, and he kept it in the special. He stops him and he goes, "Hey man, you're too close." He goes, "I can literally hear the director in your ear, in your headphones." And then the crowd laughed, and Louis shit on the guy, and I love that he kept it in. It was so funny because you know, you want it intimate, you want to get that really good shot, but
at what cost at the same time? Well,
it depends on, you know, some people are easily distracted. Like I am. I can't, I'm not good at, like, I hyper notice everything that's happening in the room.
Very aware. I mean, it's pros and cons. I'm very present always, but sometimes I'm like, oh man, I'm like, I'm seeing and hearing everything in the room.
Yeah. Right, right. And it's almost like the Andy Kindler disease. I don't know if you ever see Andy Kindler work, but like he can't even get through a set because he has to, like, if a person drops a drink, if somebody orders a drink, if somebody fucking yawns, like he'll stop mid joke and deconstruct everything that's happening. And you know, and that's kind of the point, but I find myself having to like really regulate how much I notice.
Oh, it's something I've had to work on hard over the years of choosing when I want to go off the rails, like off of little things in the crowd. Because if I did it, I mean, I could easily do it the whole time if I wanted to just keep nitpicking little things, especially like in clubs that like it's a Friday night, like a late show or something. Yeah. I mean, that could be the whole show if you want it to be, because people get so rowdy and sloppy. And
that's to me what a Friday night late show is I just walk on stage knowing I'm usually looking at my set list. I got some new jokes. I'm kind of going through it. Friday night late show, I just walk on, like I just roll up my sleeves. Like, all right, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you a couple things about, like male friend. Well, actually I want to talk. You just talked about like making decisions on stage. And I was thinking driving over here, because yesterday I played in a golf tournament and I played in a foursome with three billionaires, like literal billionaires.
Yeah.
Like they live in Cabo. They flew up on a private jet. They're staying at the Four Seasons and they all are, you know, they're still working, but they don't need to be, you know, they're like maybe 60.
Do you feel out of place 65. At all? Or are they,
no,
are they
I don't
chill?
Care. I look down on them. I really do. I look down on them because I just realized like they probably gave their whole lives to get this successful.
Right.
They've got everybody. They've got a power dynamic with everybody in their life where they're better than them. They have control. They have power. And that's the life they chose. And then And then they'll even say to me, like, do you belong to a country club out here? I'm like, yeah, Penmar, the municipal place in Venice. It's 9 holes. You know, like I don't care. Like, right. I never, when they...
It's probably refreshing for them, honestly.
Well, that's why I think it works. Because yeah. I play in these charity tournaments all the time, and they mm-hmm. always pair me up with, like, 3 or 4 billionaires, and I just make them laugh. But I started thinking about, none of them ever strikes me as super smart. And so I say to myself, they don't tell good jokes. Like, even a joke, they can't tell it right. Which I always find a sign of intelligence if you can be funny.
Sure.
And they're not funny. So there's that. The outfits are bad. The golf game's not good. And I said, what makes these guys billionaires? And I thought it's consistency and focus. And I thought about, they just have always made good decisions. They've had the sort of like I think about how many decisions everybody makes in their life. And there's the big ones like, should I buy a house? Should I refinance my mortgage? Mm-hmm. Should I, you know, go with this agent or this agent? Like, whatever the big decisions are. But then you're making how many fucking other decisions? Like, you decided to wear that hat today. You know, like, that was a decision you made, and you got to live with that.
I got to live with this for the rest of my life.
People are going to watch this podcast forever.
And they're going to be like, why did he wear that hat?
Why did he trade a car? What kind of car was it?
It was a Honda.
Oh, all right. Well, then I guess.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't as nice of a car as what you thought it was going
to be. So you got a pretty good deal, actually.
I actually feel like I lost money on this.
But like the micro decisions that we constantly make, and I think about it with stand-up, because in a 1-hour set, you probably make 1,000 decisions.
Oh, yeah.
Should I move to the right side of the stage? Should I honor this moment that's happening and break out of my set?
Mm-hmm.
Should I speak louder? Should I take the mic further away? You know, there's just so many little things that you're just, I slow down. And I thought about, like, how much of our decision-making is subconscious and how much of it do we sit down with a piece of paper and do pros and cons? And, mm-hmm. you know, it's interesting because your life is the sum total of your micro and macro decisions that you make. And what is it that makes you good at making those?
Me or just us in general?
Well, let's talk about you. Like, do you think you were raised in a way that made you a confident, informed decision maker? Or did you have to kind of like retrain yourself?
I think it's a mixture of both. I was raised, fortunately, with like a family with a lot of love around, right?
And Iowa?
A lot of support in Kansas.
Kansas.
But financially, I think I have tried to learn on the sides of what to do and what not to do based on family stuff, mm-hmm. you know? Just something like what I've seen worked with parents and family over the years of like going in and out of debt and all that stuff.
Right.
So I think it's a mixture of like support, but also like knowing what to learn from.
Right. You know? What they did right and what they did wrong.
Sure. And so I try to apply that to not only just financial stuff, but just like life stuff in general.
Right.
And like what I want, you know, the sum of decisions, what you're talking about. You're right. It's heavy when you look at it like that. It's like, well, you know, if you're at this point, at what age, then you're like, oh, well, I put myself here.
Yes.
It's a series of decisions that have led me to this place right here, right now.
Right.
So if you're in a good spot, then you feel pretty good about yourself. But if you're not feeling great at the moment, then you're like, oh man, what could I have done differently and all that stuff? So
you regret.
Right.
And that's the other thing I think that you could probably say about these billionaires is that old axiom of like, you know, mistakes are fine as long as you're learning from them. Mm-hmm. You know, like don't look back unless you're looking back to learn.
Yeah.
You know, don't look back to beat yourself up. But if you can say to yourself, I'm on my third marriage, like what's my part in this?
Sure. I saw, I mean, this is like adjacent to what we're talking about, but 50 Cent and Eminem, like peak of their fame, like putting out, I mean, they're still obviously both huge in different ways, But 50 Cent was supposed to go on tour with Eminem when his daughter, Eminem's daughter, Haley, was very young. And they were going to make so much money doing an Eminem and 50 Cent tour. And Eminem said he wouldn't do it. And he's like, why? He's like, I don't want to see my daughter like just grow up without me.
Yeah.
And 50 Cent said it did not hit him until he could never understand for years and years. It didn't hit him until he went to Eminem's daughter's wedding. And then he's like, oh, it's already here.
Right,
like that's right. You know, people make their choices of like, you know, the sum of decisions, like could have made millions and millions here, but like no, he decided to make millions in a different way, right. So he could still be like in his daughter's life.
Yeah, I look at Joey Diaz because he had, you know, he was in a bad place when his first daughter was born, and he has regrets about not being in her life, and I think they don't have a good relationship. Then he had another daughter about, what is she, about 8 now?
Yeah.
And that guy doesn't tour.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to New Jersey. He's friends with his neighbors. He goes to her practices. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, there's the conventional decision making where, yeah, I can play percentages on every decision that I make, you know, or I can sort of like, you know, you look at people that make it in a different, you look at like a Weird Al Yankovic who came up when, you know, musical comedy was looked down on and people, he was a nerd and, mm-hmm. and he just went, no. Hawaiian shirt, big glasses,
this
parodies.
Is
this is me.
Yeah.
And then it all works out. I mean, there's so many different people that that find their own way. But the confidence to make that decision based on who you are and honoring that, that's a hard decision to make for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think failure is often, when I look at some people that are failing, I'd go, because you're doing everything that just worked. You're looking at, you know, oh, viral videos where I do this. Okay, yeah, but that was last year.
That worked for that person.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're constantly beating themselves up because, well, I'm doing it and they're doing it, but it works. You know, well, you got to figure out what your thing is, but how do you know that? And then how do you have the confidence to make that decision?
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of doing that. You do your own thing.
Yeah. I've been fortunate to be a part of a lot of cool shows over the years in LA.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I feel good about is me knowing when I need to move on from something.
Right.
You know? I've been a part of a lot
watch
of
you walk off
shows.
The podcast right now.
The best closer to a podcast. And I know when to be done with something. And you're like, hey, that's our producer's hat.
We got 6 minutes left, man.
Yeah. Wait.
Yeah. So you walked away from what?
I mean, just over the years. So like I used to be a part of Roast Battle, and we had an amazing run with that, with like The Wave. We did 3 seasons on Comedy Central with that.
Yeah.
And we all kind of like me, Jamar Neighbors, and Willie Hunter, we knew when it was like it was our time to like for the show to evolve
mm-hmm.
without us. The most recent one being when Kill Tony moved to Austin, that ended up being for me a great way for me to really reinvent like people focusing on what I do
right.
and not just being associated with the band. And I love being associated with Kill Tony and like all the years that I had with it, but to be seen as just a saxophone player and something, there's people who still are like, you do comedy
mm-hmm.
because they right. only see you through a certain lens that is being presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
So with my show Stand Up on the Spot, Joe was Rogan was a big fan of doing the show and did it a lot in LA, but where he and I were saw it differently, he didn't think that the show should be filmed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Where I saw it as its own art form. I'm like, it's not, it's like jazz. It's like, it's literally, it's his own thing. It's not stand up, but like, it's stand up on the spot. You're riffing. Like, I think it should be filmed because true comedy fans love to see how the brains work of comedians, stuff like that. So I started.
And also, comedians aren't burning the material.
Exactly.
It's not from their act. Yeah.
So it's like a win-win. And
right.
It's a display of like them being funny, like, you know, just like a podcast, like, but on stage. That's how I look at it.
Right.
So when Joe moved to Austin and Tony moved to Austin, I was like, okay, I'm not doing Kill Tony anymore. I can focus really on filming Stand Up on the Spot more. And that's been awesome. And that's been growing like over time. We're at like, like almost 150,000 subscribers on stand-up.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's in the course of like the last few years of like honing in on that and really doing that. And, if Joe wouldn't have moved to Austin, I probably just, I'm a fan of Joe. I would have kept having him on the show and be like, yeah, we don't need to film it, you know?
Right.
But it forced me to be like, okay, like let's do the thing. And, it was a weird blessing in disguise when I started like really putting all in on that. So, and then with like the comedy jam with Josh Adam Myers, I was honored to be a part of that for like 4 or 5 years as well. And I kept being seen as, you know, a saxophonist and like this this hype man character that was on the show, and people were not focusing on my stand up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all love, but I'm gonna and we talked about it, and I was like, I think it's time. I was like, you don't need a sidekick anymore.
Right.
You're doing this. Like, yeah. You are Josh Adam Myers is the comedy jam.
Yeah.
So I've tried to be selective of when to know when it's time to wrap things up.
Yeah, I mean, it really is hard. Like, I have a social media person that helps me out, and she's like, you know, people know you as a podcaster because I've always put up clips on social media from my podcast, and rarely from my stand-up.
Right.
And she's like, there's a lot of people that, she's like, it's going to take time. We're going to have to introduce, and which is funny because I've been doing stand-up for 35 years. So There are obviously people that know me from that, but like not on social media as much mm-hmm. as just like word of mouth people yeah. know me. And so I've been like really trying to push that out. And I think it's even true with guys that open for big acts.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't break out of that. You would think, okay, so this person's going in front of 5,000 people four or five nights a week, year round. They're going to be able to come back to Denver
yeah.
and draw a crowd. Does not translate.
I know. I heard, I forget who coined the term of satellite comic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the comics that are always surrounding the big comic, but they never do their own thing.
Yep.
And that's a scary place to get pigeonholed into.
Yep.
It's like, it's cool to do that stuff. Obviously, we all want to open for bigger comics at these bigger venues and stuff. But like, how do you parlay that into your own thing?
Right.
And that's, you know, that's always the goal with like these different like shows I've been a part of over time. Like when I feel like I've done my service to the show and like vice versa, I'm like, okay, what's the next thing that I can, you know,
yes.
kind of do myself that like is my vehicle and not just putting bricks on somebody else's house.
Yeah. And cause that person can also turn on you. You know, that happens all the time. You know, I've been part of different, I was never a satellite comic, but I mean, I did Stern like 50 times. And then we had a falling out and it just went away. And like, I never put all my eggs in that basket. I never like toured with the other Stern comics or anything like that, you know? And so when it went away, I just, you know, moved on to whatever Chelsea Lately or whatever the next thing was. And then me and Chelsea had to find out. I started like burning every bridge.
my hat slowly starts going lower over my face.
Yeah, right. And then also with the transition from Kill Tony, you came out of the closet, which was weird because you're married with a child.
I know. That was the biggest shock to people.
Yeah.
And
the hat was a big part of it.
Yeah. I said, I'm gay and I wear hats now.
When did you tell your wife?
She's going to see this episode.
Oh, this is it? This is the moment?
I can label this episode, Jeremiah comes out gay and in a hat.
Do you want to?
I think it'll get some clicks.
Do you want to talk to camera to your wife?
Hey, I know you knew that I was gay, but I also like hats too.
I think one definitely leads to the other.
This is a gateway. Yeah.
All right, it's time for Fastballs with Fitz.
Okay.
Who's your best male friendship?
Oh man.
It's funny when you're young, you could say it, and then you get older and you're married and
yeah. My buddy, one of the buddies that comes to mind is my buddy, Chris McMillan, who, I work very closely with. He's my DP on Stand Up on the Spot and this with this production company, stuff like that. We talk all the time and are very close. And then, but there's
a
bunch of comics.
Do you tell him shit that you don't tell anybody else?
I'm pretty guarded.
Yeah.
with that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I keep...
Very Midwestern.
Yeah, I keep a lot of stuff close to the chest.
Yeah.
Like, I got upset with a buddy the other day when I was venting about something, and his wife was in the background. I was like, dude, you got to tell me this before I'm like...
No shit.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
That's not cool at all.
Dude, right? I'm like, bro, like... He's like, I said, and I was like trying to be polite. I was like, this and this and this. And then he's like, well, you can tell her. She's right here. I'm like, what the
oh
frick?
Oh, my God.
I was like, I'll talk to you later, dude.
No, you like, start the call with, I'm here with my wife.
Yeah. Or, hey, you're on speaker in the
exactly.
car with so-and-so.
Right, right, right.
Right away.
Yes.
So I got heated about that, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he's a close buddy, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Who's the worst opener that you ever ended up with on the road?
I mean, I'm not. I definitely am not going to remember their name, but I had a show that was the first show back during COVID. That there were, it was at Raleigh's
Charlie Goodnight's.
Uh huh. Where we had legitimately 7 people in the crowd.
Uh huh.
People are walking by, being like, "Is this open? We don't." Literally, nobody knows that there's a show going on. Mm-hmm. Like. It's so brand new to the, like, outside of COVID. I flew from LA to Raleigh, North Carolina, while my wife is pregnant with our firstborn. And I'm just like, you know, trying to get some work, that kind of a thing. This opener makes the crowd feel bad about how there's only 7 of them.
Oh, never do that.
And I said, hey, man, I don't give notes to comics.
Yeah.
But I said, I'm going to tell you something that you should never, ever do again. And it's what you just did on my show.
Uh-huh.
I said, why are you making the 7 people that are here feel weird or bad about them being the only ones here? They're the ones who got the tickets.
They showed up.
They showed up for us.
Right.
Why are you making them feel bad? I said, don't ever do that again.
Right, right, right.
And I never, you know, I'm always, I try to be very easygoing with the comics I always work with, but I'm like, yo, dude, never again.
Yeah.
Never,
yeah,
ever do that again.
And don't even tell them they're bad. If you're the opener, you never say, well, you guys suck. Oh, well, now they've identified as sucking.
Yeah. Then now they've lost faith in the show.
Yep.
And now I'm in a giant hole for the hour that I got to do.
Right. Say, yeah. I suck. I'm sucking tonight.
Right.
Not you're sucking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh, you're not feeling this. Whatever. You're not feeling me. Figure it out.
What's the closest you ever got to a fist fight on stage?
Hmm. I have been hit a couple different times in different ways. Hit or pushed.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been nut tapped. I've been pushed. I've been...
The nut tap was on video, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was
saw
at the
that.
Store.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've had weird altercations with people where there was one guy who started sweating who I thought was going to deck me when I got too close to him. I could tell that he was about to clock me.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because I riff a lot. I get silly. I sometimes will go into the crowd. And some people just are not with being a part of the show.
Right.
And this dude, like, I was doing this dumb, like, character thing where I was, like, getting really close in his face. He said into the mic, he goes, you have no idea how bad I want to hit you right now. And I was like, okay. And everybody heard it in the mic. And I was like, okay, it's on to the next person. Like, I was like, this dude, like,
yeah.
About, like, even the security was like, dude, you almost got decked.
Yeah,
you got to be careful.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, I know. That one was on me.
Yeah, and you kind of, you'd have video of the assault and the judge would go, that was your fault.
Yeah,
actually.
He provoked you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. The other ones where I've been hit on stage, I wasn't, you know, I feel like they kind of came after me, but
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. Well, something about you.
Something about this face and this hat.
Have you ever not finished a set on stage?
No. Saw it through.
Got to do it.
Got to do it. Even if I absolutely despise the crowd,
yeah.
I will finish.
Yep.
Sometimes I will make that crowd pay.
Sure.
Sometimes I'll be like, oh, you didn't like that? Get ready for this 4-minute act out I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You don't like my sense of humor? Guess what? You're at least going to remember how much you hate me by the end of the night.
That's right. Yeah.
Better to be memorable than bland.
I have 4 abortion jokes, and if the crowd's good, I'll only do 2 of them.
You'll abort the other ones?
Abort the other ones.
You won't see them go to term.
In some states, you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
You have to do all 4.
Yeah.
And then finally, I'll ask you, what's the hackiest bit that you've ever done?
I had a bit that...
I love you went right into it. You know how many comics fucking sit there and go, I don't know. I don't think I ever had a hacky. Oh, fuck off.
Oh, no. I'll him and haw around who I'm close with. But yeah. I but I will. I know exactly what is considered super hacky.
Yeah.
That I used to do. Or I'm like, that I still close with. I had this bit, and I would do this bit where it was like, I had a couple different bits where I would hump the stool, and it would freaking destroy.
Yep. Yep.
And I had this bit where I would take a stool down to the ground and just different positions, just,
yeah.
And it would, like, people loved it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, I think in the 80s, the MC used to have to come up with a rag and wipe the stool down between comedians because everybody was humping the stool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Listen, man, what a blast.
Dude, thank you so much for having me.
Looking forward to having you on. It's always great. You're the best.
And you're coming up on a stand-up on the spot that we're shooting.
Stand-up,
so.
I can't wait to do it.
Excited.
I'm coming in with my brother, who I was just saying, like, don't ever bring somebody to a show. But my brother said to me, I'm flying him out for his 60th birthday, and he's going to spend like a week. And he goes, you know what I really love is coming to the clubs with you and just hanging out with the comics and all that. He goes, I know you hate that. I know you don't do that, but it's my birthday. And so I said, oh, God. And then you asked me to do your show. And I said, you know what? That one will be fun because it's a party. That,
for sure.
Yeah. So so he's going to come down.
Well, he's going to have fun. Yeah. Bring him back to the green room.
I don't know about that.
I'll give him the royal treatment.
Really?
It's his birthday. Of course, dude. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Come on. It's his birthday. And that's what he asked for. He's getting it.
All right. Good. I love
it. Yeah.
The newest special is called Daddy on YouTube. There's also one called Family Reunion on Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. The podcast is called what?
Trailer Tales and Stand Up on the Spot. I do a weekly podcast with Chelsea Lynn and Libby Higgins. That's super fun.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Tour dates coming up in April, the 18th and 19th at the Blue Note in Hawaii, Honolulu. April 25th at the Grand Theater in Tracy, California. Is that right?
These are not my
No. This is Caroline Ray's dates. If she gets sick, all right, if Caroline Ray dies in the next week, then...
then I guess I'm filling in for those dates.
That's so hilarious.
I'll be in...
Tacoma, Washington, June 27th and 28th. Tyler, Texas, mm-hmm. July 18th and 19th.
Kansas City, Springfield, Missouri, Austin, Texas. And then, some more dates.
Can I suggest you put those dates on your website?
They should be on there.
They're not.
But maybe not. Okay, well... and, you know, that's who I can blame for the tickets not moving. Me not putting the dates on the site.
Well, they're out there now. You heard it, America. He's going to be there in the hat.
Oh, wait a second. That's my hat. That's my hat. They made me wear this hat. They put this hat on me. That's the real reason.
It's his hat. He walked in here with it.
I walked in with a green hat.
And is that the Allman Brothers on your shirt?
Beatles.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, now I see.
In that era.